Here we go. Back for another edition of Bridging the Gap. I'm here with my co-host,
Kelly Cantwell.
We messed up. Here we go, starting all over again.
And today we have a, what word did you pick?
Beautiful day.
Beautiful guest.
It's a rainy day.
Oh, we have a wonderful guest today. I like that. A wonderful guest. We're here today with Lieutenant Gutierrez. How you doing, Lieutenant?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. We're doing well. We wanted to talk a little bit about training.
We wanted to let Lieutenant Gutierrez introduce himself.
See, here we go again. Here we go. Kelly knows that I like to just dive right into things. So, Lieutenant, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, I'm Lieutenant Rob Gutierrez. I've been here at the university for almost 25 years. Started off as a student worker. One of the best hires I've ever had here. I also did some training and hiring. One of the best hires was your own truly, Darren Chenault.
Whoop, whoop.
Yep. But, so I've been in many different things. I've been over patrol. I've been over training, special events, internal affairs. And currently I'm back in training and special events.
Wow. Sounds like you do a lot for the university.
I've done a lot. It's treated me well.
That's awesome. Hey, just to talk a little bit about training, we were kind of curious what kind of training goes into training our officers? Like, do they get this whole continuing training every year, and what is it that we do?
So that's a big question. Mm-hmm. So all of our officers, we do an abundance of training. So the first thing that we have to do is required by the state of Ohio. So that includes all of our continued professional training, and each year it varies from year to year, and it's typically around 24 hours, and that includes mandated training that is deals with ethics, deals with use of force, it deals with any type of legal updates, deals with Fourth Amendment training with search and seizure. And then, so that's about 8 hours, and then we go into 16 elective hours. So the state will give us 16 elective hours of what we can do. And we can choose anything from, you know, driving, mental health, bias-free policing training. This year, one of the things that we did was alert training, which is we did two full days of active threat training in order to make sure our officers are prepared to keep everybody safe.
That's big. Mm-hmm. So when you guys do this training, as far as the active shooter training, mm-hmm. what goes into that? Is that, you know, are all the officers doing it at one time? Do you have people come in to help? Like,
so what we typically do is, so all of our officers go through active threat training. So, and we call it active threat, not active shooter training, because okay. you never know what that threat could be. It could be various things. It could be, you know, a knife attack. It could be a firearm. It could be various things. But all of our officers go through. It's a two-day course that they do. Sometimes we do one day. It just depends on timing. However, this year we did 2 days. The first day, it included, I believe it was 5 instructors, and we try to limit the class to around 8 to 10 people, 8 to 10 officers at a time, because that gives the instructors the ability to, you know, really work with those officers one-on-one to make sure they're doing things effectively to be safe, moving through the hallways, different things, moving through efficiently to make sure everybody can stay safe. But they, like I said, 2 days. First day is going to be the movement and training and whatnot, and then that second day we put everything together. That's when we're going to have usually around 6 instructors. Mm-hmm. Those same officers that attended the first day will go to the second day. And it's all scenario-based training. So we put them, it's called simunition rounds. And so if an officer is getting shot at, they're getting shot at with a small paint round that, you know, it can leave a mark, it can hurt a little bit, and the officer certainly will learn their lesson. However, their goal is to go in and neutralize that threat, whatever that has been determined to be. So they're running to the threat, searching buildings, various different things. And while they're shooting, being shot on, or there could be any type of bomb, any type of explosive device. They're trying to neutralize that threat and, you know, make sure they know what they're doing, because if something were to occur like that, we want to make sure that we can get there quickly and take care of what we need to do.
And I think active threat is very concerning, especially at a university. And so, but when we think, you know, when you see an active threat or an active shooter in the news, it's kind of like you envision the suspect coming in and shooting a bunch of people with a rifle. But that's not the only type of scenario that you all train for that would be considered an active threat.
Correct. Yeah, we train for anything from a knife to explosive device, firearms, secondary devices. You know, a lot of times if with active threats, if there is a firearm involved, a lot of times there are other types of, you know, whether a weapon or a device involved that we want to make sure that we train for. So, but, you know, one of the awesome things about this training is that we're able to utilize our students as well. So a lot of times we need role players. You know, we want people running down the hallway. We want that chaos. We want our officers to encounter that chaos so they can actually, you know, run through it, make sure that they're identifying people correctly, make sure that they're, you know, if a student is saying they're a student, they're doing that safely. We want that chaos there for our officers so when they do encounter that, or if they were to encounter that, it's not going to be the first time that they have something like that.
That's great. Mm-hmm. That's great. I've been in law enforcement for a while, and I hear this whole ICAT training.
Yep.
Can you tell me what ICAT stands for, and how do you guys go about doing that training?
I can. So ICAT stands for Integrating Communication and Tactics, and that was developed by PERF, which is the Police Executive Research Forum. PERF is one of the leading kind of think tanks for policing. And they put out a lot of like best practice of what we do. So ICAT right now is seen as kind of like a best practice. And what we do is when we train that, every single officer at our agency is trained in that. And we kind of say it's kind of spinning the wheel. Okay. So, you know, we want our officers to go into a situation and have the most information that they can, whether they're responding to somebody who is, you know, completely coherent, whether they're responding to somebody that may be going through a mental health crisis, you know, the area, different things. We want them, while they're going there, to gather all the information that they're able to, okay, no matter what kind of scenario that it is. You know, and once they get there, we want them to, you know their what are their legal rights? What are the policies? What do they need to do? Like, what is the knowledge base that our officers need to have in order to, you know, if, you know, act one within their legal scope, within mm-hmm. the policy of the university, in order to remedy whatever it may be. So when we look at that, that's a communication portion of it. And then there's also the tactics. So we're gathering all different types of information. So when we gather that, when they're going into a situation, what are they doing? How are they going to act tactically in order to do that? Now, obviously, we go into a situation, and the reason I say it's kind of like a wheel where you can look at everything. If you're going into a situation where you just maybe need to de-escalate somebody, that's one thing. However, if somebody has a firearm and they're actively doing something, you're going to, you know, spin that wheel and start at a different place. So that's what we mean by that. However, the most important thing when it comes to the ICAT training is we teach our officers that the sanctity of life is the most important. So at the center of that wheel, that's the thing that we always take into consideration is the sanctity of life. Now, it's not just for us, but it's also for the person who may be, you know, acting out. It's for the people that could be victims there during a scenario. It's everybody. So not only is it us, but it's also, you know, a suspect or a victim. We want everybody to be safe. Now, this training, we do that, but we also do that in combination with other training, and it kind of all fits together. We also do something, and it's kind of the hot topic in policing, and I can't say being here for 25 years, this is something that's always been important to us. Mm-hmm. However, it's de-escalation and non-escalation training. The ICAT, at least in what I've seen, we train both of those at the same day. We're actually coming up tomorrow. We're going to be training some people. However, the ICAT training kind of tells people what to do, to whereas the de-escalation and non-escalation training kind of tells them how to do it. And so we use those together because we think that they really complement each other very well. But the de-escalation training, the non-escalation training, we've been doing that for a long time because a lot of times, you know, it's difficult for some people just to go out and speak.
Right.
And so we want to give our officers all the tools to be able to take a situation that may be chaotic to where if we're able to de-escalate that, you know, and keep somebody safe and talk somebody off a ledge, you know, have somebody drop the weapon, depending upon how we respond, a lot of times it's going to be how they respond. And we want them to respond in a manner that's going to keep themselves safe.
That's a lot right there.
It's deep.
It is deep.
It's a lot.
Because I'm kind of curious. Half the time, you know, growing up and my encounters with law enforcement have been different. And when I say different, in a way, do all officers treat everybody the same? Or is it just when you get to certain areas, certain groupings, do they treat them different?
You know, in a perfect world, I would like to say that all officers treat everybody the same way. However, we're going to be honest about that, and that's not the case. Officers are people. Mm-hmm. Officers make mistakes, you know. I would like to think that oftentimes officers are not trying to make those mistakes intentionally. However, we know that's the case. Okay, I'm not blind to that. I don't think anybody's blind to that. We're going to be real about it. You know, there's some officers out there that probably shouldn't be officers.
I think that's a great answer because, honestly, until I got in law enforcement, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once now that I'm in law enforcement, I can see that we are treating people equally.
You know, what I will say with that is, you know, with all that being said, mm-hmm. I would say at least in my encounters, the one that I've had, most officers, they're in this for the right reason. Okay. You know, you get that, you know, proverbial bad apple. However, you know, most officers that I have encountered are doing it for the right reasons. They truly want to help people. I mean, it sounds kind of cliche. It's like, I remember, you know, why do you want to get in law enforcement? That was a question I was asked, and I'm sure you were as well.
Why not?
And it's, well, I want to help people. And it sounds so cliche. However, it's true. I mean, it really is fitting. So while there are officers that shouldn't be officers, mm-hmm. I would say the greatest majority of them are doing this for the right reasons, are going to be treating people, you know, without bias. You know, they're going to be treating them the same. They're going to be treating them in a manner that, you know, quite honestly, they want their family to be treated. So.
But I think we also have those unconscious biases that we have to
absolutely
address too. And I believe that there are ways that we train that try to work on that.
We do. We work on that quite a bit. So, you know, people have biases no matter what. I have biases, you have biases, mm-hmm. you do, everybody does. If somebody is saying they don't have biases, don't believe them. I mean, everybody has them.
That's right.
So whether they're implicit biases or explicit biases, everybody has them. Explicit biases are going to be those bad biases. You know, they're the ones that, you know, Darren, the one that you're talking about growing up mm-hmm. and everything, those are going to be those explicit biases that you probably encountered. However, implicit biases, you know, it's the unconscious in us. It's when we're not thinking, okay? So, you know, one of the examples that we use is, you know, Kelly, let's say, I'll use you for example, okay? So say you're walking down the road, you're all by yourself, it's nighttime, and you're walking down the road and you see somebody walking down in your direction, opposite of you, walking down right towards you, and they may not look like the nicest individual. They may look a little rough. They may look, you know,
like me. He's just saying I look rough.
Exactly.
Like, okay, you know, I'll take that.
No. They, I mean, there's all types of things that they could look at. Maybe they look like a biker that you don't feel comfortable with. Maybe it looks like a young kid that you're like, I think that person's gonna rob me or something like that. Maybe it's a homeless person. It could be various people. However, they make you feel uncomfortable. You see this and you don't really think about it. Just move to the other side of the road to walk down that road where maybe there's a elderly woman walking down the road and you're like, I feel good with that woman. However, I don't feel good over here. So that's kind of that implicit bias that we're looking at where it's like, you know, sometimes they keep us safe. However, the most important thing when it comes to implicit bias is, you know, are you aware of those biases? And we try to instill that in our officers. We do training. So we do some training from, it was developed by down at USF, South Florida, Dr. Lori Friedel. So it's fair and impartial policing. So myself, along with a few other officers, we've been through some training to be instructors in that. And we started doing that back in just after 2015. And we wanted to make sure that all of our officers were aware of their bias. biases. You know, we don't want them to be influenced by their biases in a negative manner. So all of our officers go through, whether they're, you know, at the time, every single one went through. It was an 8-hour or 4-hour course, I believe. And then now all of our officers, everybody that's hired on, we go through that. And we do annual retraining to make sure that, you know, these ideas are fresh in their head, to whereas their biases are not going to be impacting their work or impacting any type of involvement that they have with the community in a negative manner.
So that was actually my next question. So this training that UCPD gets, it's every year?
We do.
Okay.
We do. I would say that we do some of the most training in the state of Ohio. We do an extensive amount of training, you know, anything from mental health training. All of our officers, there's a training called crisis intervention training, you know, and that has to deal with people that have a mental health crisis. You know, how do we work with those people, making sure our officers are knowledgeable about different, like, you know, maybe somebody who's bipolar or depression or various different things, individuals that are suicidal. We want our officers to go there and have this training to make sure that they are prepared to be able to, you know, ultimately help people.
I think that's an important topic too, again, especially at college, to have those, you know, we do see students who are having some sort of mental health crisis, and we are often the people who are responding initially to that. So how do you feel like that training has shaped our officers' ability to respond to that?
Oh, I think it's been fantastic. You know, all of our training. So I would say that, and I'll get into that in just a moment. However, one of the things that I've really, really enjoyed about university policing, and I've been here forever, I feel like. However, one of the things that I've really enjoyed about it, are you going to say something?
Forever. I just wanted everybody forever to know forever he's been here.
I feel like it, but it's also done great things for me. This place has treated me very, very well.
I agree.
So, where was I at?
I did catch him off guard with that forever.
You did forever. So, one of the things that I've really enjoyed about working here at the university is that we have always been, and, you know, some people don't really think about this in maybe other jurisdictions or municipalities. However, we are very much customer service oriented. Okay. So we have always been like that ever since I can remember. And, you know, when we look at the, you know, we talked about the de-escalation and non-escalation training. You know, we talk about the ICAT training that we do. We talk about any training that we do, a lot of it focuses on, you know, not necessarily 100% customer service, but it's like, how do you treat people well? You know, how do you keep them and they keep their dignity? Even if they're going through the worst time in their life, how do we do that? And so we try to instill in our officers, you know, how do you treat people? You know, because that matters, that matters. And it goes a long ways when you're dealing with an individual that may be going through a crisis, that may be having just a bad day. There's good people that just have bad days. And we understand that. That's one of the things that we really understand here at the university, especially with our department. Now, when it comes to her question, you're talking about mental health. How does that prepare us as training? You know, it prepares us. I mean, it's one of those things where we train for it. We do scenario-based training for it. We instill all those values, all those, ethics that we want them to have. And when they go out there and when they're dealing with somebody with a mental health crisis, I mean, oftentimes, I mean, we have officers that have literally talked somebody off of a ledge.
Literally.
Like, literally off of a ledge. And that's one of those things where it's like, okay, all this training. Now, does that have to do with the officer, too? And, you know, sometimes people just have an ability. They have the gift of gab. They can do that. However, we want all of our officers to be to the point where they can do that. And it gives them that confidence to be able to go out there and, you know, speak with an individual that's going through a crisis.
Oh, 100%. I know that's key. And that's, you know, you're absolutely right. I've been at a lot of agencies, and I feel like the University of Cincinnati Police Department does an outstanding job of breaking down the training that we get to meet the needs of the community. So I totally agree with you.
Well, do you have any final thoughts or any final pieces of training that you really want to highlight?
So when I look at training, we really do have the best interest of, you know, the university, you know, whether it's faculty, staff, students, we really do have their best interest in mind. You know, there's all these hot topics. So, you know, some of the things that we've talked about, the last thing that I'll kind of go into is, you know, you got your hard tactics and you got your soft tactics, okay? The hard tactics, you know, the alert training, the active threat training, different things like that. We always practice that. We've always practiced that. And we do that extremely well. I would say that some of our trainers are some of the best trainers that I've encountered. And I'm extremely confident in them in training our officers. Then we have the soft skills. And that's the de-escalation and non-escalation training and all those things. So when we're looking at training, we're not just looking at it at a, hey, we, like, there's always a threat or there's always this or always that. Okay. Sometimes it needs that softer touch, and it needs that de-escalation. It needs that non-escalation. We want our officers to be able to go in there, and, you know, I do talk about non-escalation. You're like, well, what's that? That's an officer going in there and acting in a manner that they're not going to escalate that situation, because sometimes just by wearing a badge, we can escalate that situation. And if we can make, you know, if we encounter somebody, and we can encounter one person at a time, we can make that difference. That's my goal. That is ultimately with my goal with the training that we put out as an agency to our officers, to have them make a difference with one person at a time, and it just kind of just goes from there.
That's wonderful.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Lieutenant Gutierrez,
Darren Shaw.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I thought you did an excellent job at the overview of what University of Cincinnati Police Department is doing in training. So we're glad that you came. To be honest with you, I was sitting here. I wanted to tell the people this guy is super famous right here, because every time I watch a football game, he's running off with the head coach.
Yeah, I do. And you know why I do that?
Why is that?
Why I do that? So I've been very fortunate. So for the last 7 years, I've been fortunate to be able to travel with the UC football team, and it's one of my favorite things, the most blessed things I get to be able to do. And, you know, we talk about fair and impartial policing, we talk about bias-free policing, okay? And it's like, do officers sometimes have a bias? They do. However, sometimes people do as well, okay? And when I go out there, okay, I'm encountering not just the coaching staff, I'm encountering the entire team, okay? And, you know, sometimes I talk to more than others and whatnot. However, I want to be that positive influence with those players. And when we talk about bias-free, you know, I want them to be able to see an officer out there that they can trust. And like I said, one person at a time, you know, maybe I'm that one person that I can influence one of those players. And so, I mean, I absolutely love doing that. I mean, honestly, I get to see a lot of places, and I've been to a lot of places, and so, you know, partially that's my own, like, benefit, and I love doing it. However, the positives far outweigh, like, anything that I could ever ask for.
Well, before we go, I just want to get an autograph. Absolutely. Because I know you're a famous guy out there, so if you can.
Do you want me to make it out to you?
Yeah, because I'm going to frame that and put that in my office.
I got you.
And I'm going to make sure that Kelly, make sure Kelly gets one, too.
To Kelly?
Yeah, yes. Kelly.
Is that with an EY or just a Y?
You know.
I know.
See, that's how we wrap it up here on Bridging the Gap. I want to thank 1819 Innovation Hub for hosting us.
Yes, and thank you for listening to our fourth episode.
Oh, we moving along. Fourth episode.
And to all of our students, faculty, and staff, have a great holiday season.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.